the right thing.
Okay. Oh, it's okay. Picture is okay. I'm not happy. The camera is not breaking. Okay. So this is one of the last presentations in this fancy peer-driven event. I had really hard time here, you know. I'm speaking about how to monitor freezing part of making a beer called Icebock. I shortly explain what is Icebock. My name is Gunnar Veikman. Some of you know me. Those who don't know, we have a chance to have some beers tonight, so you then all know me, and maybe some of you want to even remember me. So for short, this is our agenda. First, I tell you what is this Icebock beer. Then we are going through some simple math about freezing, and then we are taking those IoT topics. So, and when we are getting the numbers to cloud, then I show you some ways how to visualize these numbers. So, you can find all support materials from this link. I later upload also the same slide deck there. I have you one bad and two good news. Bad news is that my Raspberry, after some library updates, is a little bit crippled, and I have almost no idea what's going on. Good news one is that I have emulator that emulates what Raspberry is doing, and as we don't have much time here, then this emulator is actually even better, because it helps me to stay in schedule better. And the another good news is that those of you, or one of you, who asks the best question gets this nice prize. This is real Icebock beer, one of the top production from Germany. So I put it here so I don't see it and don't drink it. Okay, now let's get to Icebock. The legend says tells that the Icebock was discovered just by accident. One brewery lad was exhausted and very tired of hard working day at brewery, so he left some barrels with a double bock outside, and he planned to go to home, had a sleep, and continue in the morning. But the night was freezing cold, and when the dude came back in the morning, then what was in barrels was frozen. Brewmaster was pissed off, and as a punishment, he told the poor lad to drink what's left liquid in the barrels. So the lad took a sip and smiled. It was the best beer he had ever got. As a generous guy, he of course shared this nice punishment also with other guys around, and this day Icebock was officially born. It happened at Kulmbach. It's around 300 kilometers to west from here, I think. Yeah, or something like this. So here you can see some outstanding Icebock beers. They all have a high alcohol content, because after freezing, the ice is removed, which raises beer alcohol content tremendously. So you are jumping from, let's say, 7.5 to 10, 12, or 13. So, and as you can also see, then world biggest beer rating site, Great Beer, has also very, very good rankings for all these beers. Now let's dig in. So a big part of this freezing process is actually waiting, and to have some kind of estimates how long we have to wait until beer reaches its freezing point, And this freezing point is somewhere below zero. For some beers, it may even be -3, -5 or something like this. So it takes time for beer to freeze. And this is why we need some little math. So, simplest thing to go with is actually Newton's law of cooling. So, so it's actually, those of you who are familiar with differential equations, it's a pretty simple one to solve. If we start measuring something, then usually, you know, we don't have much things to do with all these differentials and stuff like this. We need some more robust equations where we can just put in numbers and get some results. So after some little playing with this nice equation, we get something like this. So this equation gives us theoretical temperature of beer in a given moment in time. So we have to know ambient temperature and initial beer temperature. This cooling rate here, during our process, it is a constant. Actually, if you check out the heat transmission theory, then this constant can be pretty complex one. But as you know, chemical content of beer and physical properties of container where beer is, they don't change, then actually we can consider this cooling rate as a constant for given beer. So now, in practice, how we find the cooling rate? We solve the previous equation for cooling rate, and then we start measuring. So we get the initial beer temperature we're waiting for, let's say, 20 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and we read beer temperature again. So now we have enough data to calculate the K. And then, of course, we can, from this equation, come out with another one that we can use to find the time. This is to calculate time estimate, how long it takes for a beer to get to freezing point. So actually this mathematics side is it's pretty simple, all these calculations side is also pretty well documented in my blog. I have around 10 blog posts about this solution. So on the chart, cooling looks like this. So it means that when we are on the right side of the chart, then cooling goes fast. When we are on the left side, then cooling is very slow. So it means that if you want to make, if you want to freeze bock beer, then we have to wait for some really cool night. So -10, -12 are excellent temperatures. So then things start happening fast. Because as I discovered, when liquid changes its aggregate state, it is like some barrier to jump over. It doesn't start freeze immediately. It still takes a little time before things start slowly happen. Over days, the cooling may look like this. You can see the blue line is beer, and orange one is ambient temperature. So in practice, you also have to consider the changes to ambient temperature. So it means that when ambient temperature changes, then you have to recalculate all your time estimates and so on. And during this progress, if you manage to control it, then you can go back to university and write Marlborough's bachelor thesis about aero and thermodynamics of balcony of Soviet time panel building, by example. So it's it's pretty challenging, believe me. Now, problems. Well, 20 liters of beer cools down really slowly. 20 liters is a typical fermenting bucket you can buy from homebrew store. To find out if ice is already creating, it's not good idea to open the bucket because then we are in danger to contaminate beer. So even though it's cold, bacteria don't live. It is in some kind of hibernated state. Okay, it doesn't live normally even later because alcohol content grows very high. Most of bacteria is not able to survive it. But still, you may get some weird side taste to your beer. So this is why it's not a good idea to open the bucket again and again. also, checking manually what's going on means that you are like a dog in a chain, so you don't go far away from your bucket. But it may take like 16 or 20 hours for beer to start freezing. So you don't want to live in your one room and just go there. Oh, is it freezing or not? And of course, it's a good idea to gather data about those cooling activities. So it's better next time. It is better and easier to plan how you do it. So, and of course, it's good to get notified when the freezing point is achieved and beer starts slowly turning to sleep. this is my solution. I didn't want to draw a nice diagram with Visio because it's otherwise like some kind of marketing department doing its job. I'm simple rough dude, and this was my idea exactly like this. So I put some microcontroller with a two temperature sensors on a bucket. I connected to my home network using Wi-Fi, and then it starts sending sensor readings to Azure Cloud, and I find a way how to visualize all this data. So now, solution itself is pretty simple. I took Raspberry Pi, and then temperature sensor. It is on right upper row, two sensors like this. These sensors survive until minus 55, I think. So, and as we don't have temperatures like in the northern part in Russia, where in some villages usually winter gets down to minus 70, so I'm not in danger that there comes a so cold night that my sensors just to stop working. Due to some limitations with Windows IoT code, I had to use one wire to Y2C adapter. This is a left one in a down row. Then, of course, a little plate where I can connect it, and one resistor. So here is a little. It's a little picture about how these temperature sensors are connected to Raspberry. And on the right, you can see the thing that was the end result. It is this plastic little box there is just to make this thing a little bit better portable. So all these places where we connected the things together, they don't get damaged while I'm from one country to another. And of course, it's excellent tool to cause some panic in Frankfurt Airport. What's going on a Windows 10 IoT core? Practically, we have a background task that is running a one-timer job. So the job is actually pretty simple. Just read temperatures, find cooling rate if it is not known. Then find theoretical temperature, estimate when freezing point is achieved, and then send all this data to IoT Hub. And then wait again some moments and repeat it. To read sensors, I first thought that it will be another sleepless weekend, but it turned out there is a library available, Rinsen.onewire. And as a gift from heaven, it had built-in support for sensors I have. So practically, I had to do almost nothing. So I checked the source code of this library. And if you are not in home with electronics, it's pretty complex thing to make it work. I mean, the protocol, how you are moving and receiving bytes, it's a lot of work. You can check out this code and you see it's not something you jump directly from hello world. So now there are another little limitations in Windows IoT Core. It's about setting timers in some electronic components. So it takes around 1 second to read one sensor. So I have two sensors, then safest interval was like 4 or 5 seconds for temperature readings. I tried with 2 seconds, so the readings, timer callbacks started overlapping, but it ended up with application crash and Windows IoT crash. So everything crashed badly. So now let's jump to Visual Studio. This is here. I have a project. You don't see it. Of course, I have to duplicate. Oh, it's better. So I have here this reader service project. It has some models and things, and the main work is done here in startup class. So this method run is called when this reader service starts on Raspberry. Here I create device connection to IoT Hub and I start the timer job. So now this timer callback, it's pretty simple. It has here one little locking trick just to avoid situation where for some reason one timer callback is running and it has taken more time than expected, and now another one starts. So there another one finds that it can't acquire lock, and then it returns safely, so it doesn't crash everything. So here I have some code for cooling rate measurement, so it happens automatically. If I don't have a cooling rate for a pair in cloud, then my solution automatically measures the cooling rate and sends it back to cloud. So I don't have to make any calculation on paper and or something like this. And lazy guy, I like to drink beer, not to freeze it. So, and then here happens a temperature reading. I wrote a simple class for this. So it initializes this one wire device handler by this good library, and then it queries for all temperature sensors that are connected to Raspberry. Here, for every sensor, I read temperature. I add here what was device ID, so I know how to report this temperature to cloud. I assign timestamp and then the temperature reading. So when this stuff is done, then data is reported to cloud, and ball back and it's it works. So oh no, what it wants now. Experiment. So do we have any idea how to make
just
it?
Just minimize this.
Huh? This one?
Yeah.
Ah, thanks. Okay. So now what is Acer IoT Hub? It is a new hub in Acer Hubs family. It is there to serve those IoT devices that send their readings to cloud, and it is a and there is also a you know support for device to device messages and so on. So it's different from regular Event Hub. Event Hub doesn't have a so-called cloud to device messages or device control, as far as I know. Also, Event Hub has less protocol supported, and it is not built up to scale massively. So, IoT Hub is built up with a massive scale in mind. So we we may have tons of devices flooding their sensor readings to IoT Hub, and it doesn't run to you know these default limits of Azure Service Bus. Now, okay, we have a device to cloud messaging, meaning that the devices are sending messages to cloud. But we have also cloud to device messaging, meaning that we may add some service that is listening to IoT Hub, and this service can send messages to devices and wait for a delivery feedback or some response by a given device. Policies mean that there are different roles. So if I connect to IoT Hub, then I have to say, okay, I want to use this policy, and I give with a policy name also a policy authentication key. So it means that the device, by example, device policy means that I can send device messages. It must be a registered device, and I can just send messages. If it's a service policy, then I can practically listen to all messages sent to IoT Hub. And when I'm owner of IoT Hub, then of course I can do everything I want. Registry here means device registry, because all those devices you are connecting, they have their own cloud identity. And packages, if you are a home brewer, then you can use free package. You should be able to go with at least four parallel batches of beer before getting to the limit of package. And if you are doing something bigger, then you can of course select from these S1 and S2 packages. If you are going over S2, you can contact Microsoft and ask what to do now. They have a solution for you anyway. Let's go back to let's go back to code. Here is how I send the data to cloud. It was also here in a previous presentation. It's actually simple. I create here one anonymous object with all the data I want to provide, deliver to cloud, and then I just serialize it to JSON string and tell device client that, okay, send this data away. This is it, it's damn simple. But it's not so simple anymore on when we are going to application side. It is easy if you are doing a regular application on full .NET, because then you have Microsoft official libraries. I wasn't so lucky guy, because I wanted all these measurements to be in my pocket. So I'm using the Azure Event Hub interface. Yes, IoT Hub is also providing the event hub interface for you. So so I connect there as a service, and then I start reading data. So bad thing is that these libraries work the way that they block the call until data is received. When data is received, if it was null, then okay, let's wait a little bit and go to another round and read again. And then again, we wait until data is received. Currently, in these client libraries, I don't found any way how I can control, let's say, this receiving timeout. It hopefully comes later, but actually this was the only way how I got things working on universal Windows applications. So simple thing, we are creating connection to Event Hub. We are we say okay, let's take this consumer group, then we create a receiver. And for a given messaging partition, and then we start reading it. So actually, the code is ugly because there is some ongoing work going on. But it's not so hard once you get how to use this Event Hub interface. Now, so let's whoa. Okay, can we go on? Okay. Now, data from IoT Hub, in my case, is going to Stream Analytics. Stream Analytics service is familiar to everybody. Raise your hand who don't know what it is. Okay, so sorry for MVPs. No. Stupid me. So, I can skip these slides. And I show you now for a moment my okay, let's go here. For Stream Analytics I have two endpoints. I duplicate again. Okay, we're good to go. I have two outputs. One output is going to SQL Azure. For some reason, it doesn't work today. Although there are no errors reported to me, then it doesn't work. But I don't see any data appearing to SQL database. And the another output I have is to a Power BI. So actually, what I'm doing, I take just a bunch of data that is that came for a given time window. I aggregate. And then results are sent. On one case, they are sent to SQL Azure, and another case to Power BI. So, and it works over 20 seconds interval. So, instead of let's say sending 100 rows to database during 20 seconds, I just send one. So. I know it's era of big data, but I don't want always to be big data because it's again thing that needs some care. So now let's see how we can visualize the data. So one option is a Power BI. Stream Analytics supports also a free edition of Power BI. Free edition means you have no connections out from Power BI to your enterprise data sources. Only push data is available. So some service is pushing data to your Power BI. So Stream Analytics can do it. So it's easy way how to build a impressive dashboard without writing any code or building nice looking pages. So you are just beautiful things terrorist with a mouse in your hand. It's pretty cool. So let's jump to Power BI for a moment. So here we have a Power BI. I add here one line chart. It is already connected to my peer data. So we want to show an axis. We want to show time, and on value axis we want to show ambient temperature and the peer temperature. So two things. Let's add also here one table with data. Let's put it here, and let's show same data here. Here we also should show. Okay, we are showing time, ambient temperature. Wow. Okay, and peer temperature. Okay, so nice. We have to save it. Let's call it peer IO. Okay, so we have here new report. It looks a little bit small, I know. Make it bigger. Okay, we have something already waiting there. And now let's add it to a dashboard. So I have here a Peer IoT dashboard. I say pin live. It means that it is now here on dashboard, and it starts updating itself automatically when data is pushed. Here on my machine, I have a Power BI Windows application. So let's see if it finds also. Okay, same thing, but it is now Windows app. Power BI has also mobile applications available, not only for Windows Phone, but also for other phones. Let's see Excel. So Excel is also one good option to visualize data. So it's often, let's say, organizations don't want to innovate. They don't want to have something cool. They want to have something that works, and they want to have it now. So Excel is old better than on computer and calculus space. So when data is going to some SQL database, then we can always take the old good Excel and connect it to our SQL database. We can add the charts and so on. And what is the best thing? We can configure this data source to refresh itself. Let's say after every 1 minute, it again sends query to database, refreshes data, and you have a practically a living dashboard there. But as today SQL Azure doesn't receive any data from stream analytics, then let's skip the Excel part and let's see last output before I run my emulator, and we see how data starts coming to applications. So Universal Windows application. This is actually a peer freezing process in my pocket. So I can go out and drink beer and meanwhile check, okay, what's going on? And find again the mysteries of Soviet time panel house balcony and its heat exchange. As it is a universal application, I can run it also on my Windows 10 desktop. If I want, I can also deploy this application to Raspberry or Arduino that has some screen connected to it, so I can see in real time what's going on. I can use the same code. So what tricks I have done here? So communication is going with these light ending libraries. Because for CoCLR, many libraries related to Azure are not yet available. On visual side, I used the WinArt example toolkit for charts and the Visual State Manager. to make application look better if you know you happen to turn your phone from portrait to landscape. And reading the data is done using a simple background process. But bad thing is these diamond processes when they are resumed after your application was a tombstone, then something gets really messy with these light libraries, and I have not yet found out what's going on. So let's jump for a moment to Visual Studio. Okay. Ah, okay, here we are. So I take we have batch view model. Okay, this is the same code I showed you before. I take this main page in XAML, and I show you now how it looks like. So it's pretty easy to make these forms working on different devices, different screen sizes. So let's see where. Okay, so here I have defined the two visual states, portrait and landscape. So now, depending on which visual state is active, there are some rules how blocks on a view must be positioned. So I can say that let's say move, if it is portrait, show data one way, and if it is a landscape, then let's say move some blocks to left and make some block wider, and so on. So it's practically easy. I saw some code where Visual State Manager is not used. Oh, it was a massive block of large block of code just to control. If it is a landscape, then move things this way, and if it is portrait, then move things that way. So with a Visual State Manager, it's damn easy to make these complex things happen. Okay. So let me show you where it happens. Okay, it's here. Now, when size of page is changed, then I check out using code. Are we now in landscape or portrait mode? And based on this, I state Visual State Manager, now go to this state. So it's the easiest way to do it. But you can also you know, define visual states that are depending on some properties that doesn't need code. Okay, so now let's try to run this client here on a mobile phone. So I'll take it also. I open it here. So now you can see if I make it bigger, then you know, this information block on the left is that was above charted is now positioned to left. So if I restore it, it's now it's not anymore landscape. Then again, the positions of components of UI are moved to another place. So now I take my emulator process. And the emulator process starts producing data for us. Okay, let's get to command line. Yep. Okay. So I'm actually using this tool usually to make sure that data is moving to IoT hub. So it is listening now this IoT hub, and it is, as you can see, it is sending out some temperature measurements. So, so here are our applications. I also take, let's see if this thing is able to refresh itself too or not. Ah, okay, we have here. We can always ask for refresh, but here it happens slower because this is now getting data through Stream Analytics, and it has a little different step of work. So it is producing data slower. So, but now here you can see how you know, measurements are coming. I have here also ambient temperature. This is the red line, because usually ambient temperature is changing, and when it changes, then if I have to visualize theoretical data points, then I have to start a new calculation from the moment the temperature changes, because ambient temperature is different now. So, this is now how you can visualize your sensors data. So here it currently it doesn't as it is not a freezing process, so we are not you know having we're not having a freezing point here, but if we have a freezing process, then these applications are able to tell that okay, we are close to freezing point. And now they are able to warn me. Okay, wake up, it's 4 o'clock in the morning, beer starts freezing, yes, no matter if it's Sunday. So, as you can see, slowly this blue line is taking the shape of exponent, as it should be. So. Okay, let's see what the hell is this doing here. And what is doing our... go there, let's see if it is... Okay, it has again some problems with the Stream Analytics. Although analytics is working. Seems like dudes are doing there something. It has happened before that... that suddenly Stream Analytics, it is working, it doesn't give you any errors, but it doesn't output any data. And then suddenly, let's say like 2 hours later, you get a bunch of data through Stream Analytics. Oh guys, they made it work. So, but you know, this universal application is, this means it's better, it is listening directly the IoT hub, and this is it. So, so this was my quick demo. Okay, so I have to. I think I have to finish with presentation right now. Well, we can see what is this thing doing. Okay, and there is you know, some ongoing work. We are trying to find now a way how to measure alcohol content of fermenting beer, and we try to rework this background system for measurements, so we can apply more measurements to cover also the first fermentation process and other complex things like this. Okay, I asked Microsoft if it is possible to come out with a software as a solution service. No, not right now, but perhaps it's possible later in the future. So we cannot do currently this thing that we have a 1B closed portal. Users can just have devices, install our package, and then start sending data to cloud, and we are doing all the processing. It's not possible yet, but I hope it's coming. Okay, this is it by me. Thank you. And now shoot the best question. I have one prize here.
Gunnar, one question. What about results? Is this beer really great?
No. What do you do if the beer is freezing?
if it is freezing.
What paper?
Well, if beer is gathering ice already, and now believe me, the ice is not by not the same color as beer, but it's like a pure water that is freezing. I have to remove, let's say, around 5 kilograms of ice, so the beer alcohol content jumps up from 7 to 12 or something like this. So, and when enough ice is removed, then I close barrel again and move beer inside back to inside rooms. So and then it is ready for bottling.
Okay. How many experiments have you done to be perfect?
It, I didn't, I don't have yet perfect one, but I think after 3 batches, you should get pretty close, because first 3 batches you are just learning how to freeze and so on. And
but you don't throw out the beer, yes? It's still you're still able to drink it.
Yes. Of course. Perhaps your first batch may come awful because you don't know yet how to play with hops. Because if you want to, just throw some water out from beer, then you have to when you are boiling hops in, you have to use less hops than usually, because otherwise. When you throw out a bunch of water, you get extremely bitter beer.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one thing that is easy to screw up with the first batch. But after 2 bottles of first batch, other bottles go easy. Okay.
Are all testers alive who tested this beer?
What's me?
Only you, survivor.
There are also a bunch of guys alive in Germany.
Excuse me, guys.
Okay, so.
Together and go for some beer, of course.
Okay, thanks.
So that's
okay.